You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Nick Monagle here with you on The Fan. Talking World Series, baby. Yeah, I forgot to mention in all the things we could talk about, Robert Saleh getting hired by Green Bay and LaFleur to help offensively, as you just heard in Marco's update. And, you know, I've always found that ridiculous when we have these conversations about the defense, like, and so much of Robert Saleh has been, like, it's just ironic, don't you think? I mean, the guy is the defensive coach, right? He's getting killed for, or at least the perception is he's not involved in the offense. He's allowing Hackett to run the offense. Like, he's not a real head coach. He's just a defensive coordinator. And the first move he makes is to go out there and start working with the offense. You know what it screamed to me? And I don't know if this is fair or unfair, but what it screamed to me is a buddy in LaFleur giving him a job that will help perception that he's strictly a defensive guy for his next head coaching job or any kind of job. Not that he'd get a job as an offensive coordinator. I think that Matt Patricia stint as an offensive coordinator in New England has probably quelled anyone's enthusiasm for seeing if a defensive coach can be an offensive coordinator. But still, a guy who might have visions of being a head coach again, just, hey, buddy, why don't you hire me? Why don't you put me as an offensive coach or, you know, a consultant? Let me help with the offensive side of the ball. Help me put that on my resume. And then I can try and start to hopefully move away from this perception of me being a defensive coach. And that's all I am. Like, that's what it screamed to me. Not that he can't help them. I don't want to make it seem like it's a complete, you know, just a friend doing a friend a favor completely. I think Robert Saleh is a good football guy. And I've always felt like a defensive coach should be able to help an offense because, you know, they go against each other. And you can see, well, this is what gives me trouble. When an offense would line up like this, I was always worried they would do that. Like, it makes perfect sense that you should be able to have some perception on the other side of the ball, whatever your strength is, defensive, offensive. You should have a recognition of what you were trying to avoid or what always caused you problems coming at it the opposite direction. But that's what it felt like a little bit like, I'll come help you. We're buddies. You know I'm a good football guy. I'll come help you. But let's not make it defensive. Let's make it offensive so I can round into form here and put that on my resume and maybe help me with the perception that I'm strictly defense. I know that's a little bit jaded, but that's what it sounded like to me. And good for Robert Saleh, whatever. Good luck to him. I think him being fired was a mistake. I said it then. I didn't say it as loudly because I didn't believe him to be a great head coach. And I didn't feel like pounding the table, screaming. I said it was a mistake, but I didn't go nuts on it because is it ever a mistake to get rid of a guy who's not the guy? I don't know. But it certainly didn't freaking help. And now that you're two games removed from it, I mean, it just didn't help. And it probably ended up being more of a negative than a positive. But that could turn around in 1 week, and they start against New England this week, and we'll see what happens. 888-808-1019. But we're talking a lot of baseball as well. Gerrit Cole to start game one for the New York Yankees. Steve in Bayside. What's up, Steve?
What's going on, Chris?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm good. But one thing, I have to talk to you a little bit about Gerrit Cole.
Sure.
This past year, Since he came back from the injury, his stuff was not the same. Now, obviously, he was coming off a Cy Young the year before. But if you look at his, if you want to get into like his pitch values on Fangraphs, they were, you know, kind of consistently in the low 80s. That's like number two starter kind of stuff. Now, he brings other things to the table, too. He's got, you know, a lot of he's got a lot of experience. He's somebody that I do trust in a big spot for this series. But, you know, I know that he's got his contract, his option coming up this year.
Yeah.
I really wonder if he would get on the open market even what he has left. He's 34 years old. I really wonder if he would have on his contract, if he would get on the open market what he has left on his contract, much less add another year on top of that. So, and I'm sure the Yankees are very aware of this.
Yeah.
I would tell him, if I was the Yankees, look, I'm looking forward to seeing him pitch this World Series. But this offseason, I would tell Garrett, we love you. We want to honor the rest of your contract. But I would really be hesitant to add that extra, you know, to just give him the extra year, because that's the type of thing. I mean, I think it's $34 million. That's going to be, that would be something that could really come back to bite you.
Nah, I doubt it. I think you have to. It won't come back to bite them as much as not having him next year. I don't know what would they do? Go sign, you know, Corbin Burns to a long contract? I mean, I know he had an injury thing this year, but he's been the most durable starting pitcher in the sport for the last decade. And he's been one of the best. He won a Cy Young last year. I'm with you on the stuff this year. He did have a better, I mean, he was bad to start. He had a better last couple of weeks. I mean, he was pitching, you know, to the last 28 days of the season, he had a 135 batting average against. Like, he was starting to round into shape a little bit, I thought. I'm trying to look at the splits here for the month. But I think, here we go. August, where's the ERA? Why am I missing it here? It doesn't matter. I'll look at it later. To me, they need him desperately next year. And I agree with you on the open market. I don't know what his contract, what he would get. But for me, if you're willing and they're on the hook for another 4 years, I don't view it. The only way you don't give him the extra year is if you view getting out of the next 4 years valuable to you. And I don't think getting out of the next 4 years is valuable to the New York Yankees. He's been their best pitcher. He won a Cy Young. He's starting game one of the World Series. He won them the one game they had to in the postseason. He's been everything you could possibly want other than a few months this year. He's made every single start. He's a guy who's literally another pitching coach on the staff. Every player looks up to him. He's enormously valuable. And so for me, unless I view it as, hey, if we have the opportunity to get out of the next 4 years, then let's do it. But it's not like, oh, that extra year will really hurt us. I don't care if that year's a sunken year.
No, I disagree, because like, call his bluff. It's a business for both sides.
Well, there is no bluff.
You don't have to give him this year just to make him happy.
Yeah.
You say, hey, look, Garrett, you know, if you think you can do better, be my guest. Now, he's a smart guy and he's a Boris client. Mm-hmm. They're going to know what the market is out there for him.
Right.
And they're not going to want to have egg on their face in 3 or 4 months after that and go sign for less money with somebody else. I mean, that's the last thing that Boris wants for his reputation. So you just call his bluff and say, Derek, we love you, but we're just going to honor the contract and see what he does. I think make the smart business move and say, okay, we're just going to leave it as it is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's not calling a bluff. I don't think they're going to go out of their way to tell him, don't opt out. We're not going to help you. I think they're going to just do nothing. And if he opts out, they'll deal with it. Like, I don't think they're going to have a preemptive conversation with him. They know you're right. They know the market. They'll decide whether or not they should do it. I mean, I don't think they're going to, unless they go to him and he goes to them and says, you know, hey, you know, quid pro quo, you know, you want to just give me this extra year? And the Yankees say yes. But I think it's not in the Yankees' interest to do anything other than let's see what move he makes.
Yeah.
Like, they'll just wait, and if he makes the move, they'll decide to give him a year, or they won't. But I don't think they're going to like preemptively go to him and say, hey, we're not giving you that extra year. I wouldn't, to my guy, to my ace, why would I start, why would I have that conversation with him? If he opts out, then we have to have it. He forced my hand. But I'm not preemptively threatening him to say, hey, you better,
not opt out. That. I mean, like, I mean, Boris, I'm sure, you know, is a phone call away from Brian Cashman.
Yeah.
And he would say, well, you know, what's your intentions with Gerrit Cole? And they would, this is what I would, you know, I would say that we intend on honoring the contract and then let Boris make the decision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, of course they have no choice but to honor the contract. You don't call Scott Boris and say, we intend to honor the contract. Why? What do you mean? Do you intend to not honor the contract? You can't. The contract is non-negotiable. These are guaranteed contracts. Scott Boras is going to call them and say, look, we're opting out. Or he's going to say, hey, we're not. But in my mind, I give him the year. I don't think there's a doubt. I think Gerrit Cole still would get a pretty damn good contract. Like, I know... I mean, this year, like, if you look at his numbers this year, I mean, he pitched to a 3.4 ERA. Not great. Absolutely not. Not ace-like. That's totally true. He pitched 95 innings. It's coming off an injury. But, I mean, the elbow's intact. It's not any reason to think he's got further damage. And he's been the most reliable starting pitcher in the sport. You want to talk about value, right? Okay, maybe he didn't have the year some other pitchers had. He's not Scoobal, you know, as of right now. He can go back to, he was the Cy Young Award winner last season, and he's the Yankee ace right now pitching game one of the World Series. And he's the most durable starting pitcher in the last 10 years, bar none. It's not even close. You want to talk about spending money in the starting pitching market? You know where it starts? How many innings does he pitch? How many innings does he give us? How many starts does he make? And nobody can answer that question better than Gerrit Cole. Nobody. Even off a year with a little bit of elbow issues. Again, now, I don't know what the elbow looks like. The Yankee doctors know better. But in my mind, I think Cole is going to opt out, and I think the Yankees are going to give him that extra year. And I don't think the Yankees should be worried about it at all. Because, again, I'm not worried about that last year. You're right. There's a very good chance that last year is miserable and that he's not good or injured or at the end of a pitching career. And he's not nearly worth the $34 million. Absolutely. That is 100% on the table. Or $36 million. I think it's the same money for the last year. That year might be terrible. They need him next year. They need him the next 2 years. You can't just, you know, and where are they going to go in starting pitching? I don't see the value in it unless they believe that the next few years will be down years for him and that the medical report on his elbow isn't great or they're concerned about it on some level and they think, wait, if he opts out, we've just saved ourselves a bunch of money. Maybe they win a championship and they say, hey, we paid for the best part of his career. We've won a championship with him. The next handful of years aren't going to be as good as the last handful of years. And if he wants to opt out and give us an opportunity to opt out, see ya. And we'll go spend our money elsewhere. I don't know where you're going to spend it that's more reliable than Gerrit Cole. That's all I'm saying. And he's become a fixture with this team, a leader with this team. He's another pitching coach. He's everything you want from an ace. I mean, let's just be honest. I know like on some level people don't feel that way about him. He's like bar none the most durable and accountable starting pitcher in the league. And he won the Cy Young Award last year. I'm not messing around. I'm keeping Gerrit Cole. If it costs me $36 million, it costs me $36 million. We're seeing what, you know, I know they're going to a lot of bullpens. Right now, you could see the difference in the series being Gerrit Cole. There is no doubt in my mind. At the end of this thing, you could point to Gerrit Cole being the most integral part of the Yankees winning a championship. Or at least beating the Dodgers in the World Series. I can't afford to lose him. But he might not opt out. At his age, coming off an elbow injury, you're right. I don't know what the market would be. Now, it's the free agent market isn't that great. It's really Corbin Burnes at the top of it. And he would hit at a time where it's not a lot of starting pitching. I bet you he still gets a pretty damn good contract. Considering how durable he is, I bet you he would still get a pretty damn good contract. I think it's probably in his best interest to probably opt out. And then if I were Brian Cashman, I'd pick up the extra year. That's it. I think it's really simple. He's done enough. If he just wins them a championship, it's a nice little tip to the cap. Thank you for the championship. Here's one more year. Easy peasy. I don't think there's any doubt. Because again, like we just, I mean, look at the amount of innings that this guy has pitched. Like I remember I had a caller a couple weeks ago talking about not wanting to give Gerrit Cole ace status because he comes out of these games in the sixth inning, or like he doesn't go deep into the games, and what kind of ace would you call, like, you know, someone who doesn't pitch that, blah, 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 blah. Like, since 2015, when he had his breakout year with Pittsburgh, he pitched to a 2.6 ERA that year, 208 innings. Then the next year was down a little bit, 116. Then 203, 200, 212. 2022, only 73. I don't know what that would equate to in a 60-game season. I think it was a full 60 games. I don't remember him being hurt for any time. So, I mean, that's pretty much on par with a 200 inning. He didn't do it, so you can't count it, but he didn't have the opportunity. So 208, 116, 203, 200, 212, 181, 200, 209. Led the league with 209 that year, the Cy Young. And then this year, 95. I mean, I would venture to guess, name me another starting pitcher who has given you as many 200-plus innings over the last handful of years. I don't know if you could find it. Like, Corbin Burnes is going to be the best pitcher on the free agent market. Corbin Burnes has had one 200-inning season. One. 21, 167. 22, 202. 23, 90, 193. 2024, 194. That's pretty close to 200. I mean, you want to round up, but again, 200 innings. Cole has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Corbin Burnes has one. Mello in Orange County. What's up, Mello?
Hey, C-Mac. Thanks for taking my call, man.
You got it, buddy. What's going on?
Yeah. Just wanted to tell you that everyone's complaining about these ticket prices for the World Series, right? So yep. In 2009, I was in college, and I remember how much the ticket prices were because I was looking. I was standing outside Yankee Stadium looking on my phone at StubHub. It was $650 to get on the door, even at game time.
Right.
Adjusted for inflation, it's over $1,000 right now.
Yep.
It's the Dodgers. What do people expect?
No, right? I understand. Now, it's crazy, and I'm worried it's going to price people out, but, I mean, it will price people out.
It does suck, but what I was going to say also is, why aren't the Yankees doing a watch party? It is Friday night in the Bronx. It's going to be 50 degrees. They could charge $50, and they would have 20,000 people in there. If the Mets could do it for a divisional game or a wild card game or whatever they did it, why? It's the World Series. What's going on with the Yankees?
I understand that. I mean, if you want to be there, I don't know. I guess they could sell tickets real cheap and give them a break, considering, you know, you get in there for like $5, $10 max you charge for tickets
they
to
would.
Get in.
And,
yeah.
In 2000,
and you sell beer and everything.
They
you
opened it. Yeah. Yeah, they did it in 2009. They opened it up for the ALCS and the World Series.
Yeah.
I'm just confused. They should do it. Someone should get in someone's ear if it's possible. The fans would love it.
Well, listen,
and the fans who can't get into the game could go to the watch party.
I think
like a consolation prize.
Well, I know Bill. I think Billy's across the street. I think Keith. I heard him saying it. I'm not sure if he's doing it both Friday and Saturday, but I think he is. But they're gonna have a watch party. They're gonna have a watch party at Billy's. I know that's not the same as being in the stadium, but
that's not the same. It's not the same, but, you know, Yankee Stadium would be an epic experience, and then just the ambiance there. But thanks a lot for taking my call.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I guess. I don't know. I that wouldn't interest me necessarily. I wouldn't go even for $10 and then go buy, you know, $17 beers at Yankee Stadium to go sit in. I mean, you want to be with fans, no doubt. That would be fun, but I don't think that's something to go watch it on a screen. You're right. When Pete Alonso hit that home run, right? I think that was the night that they were there. There were different watch parties. It looked fun, but I don't know. It's not something that would interest me, so it's not something I can't rally about. But to give the Yankee fan an opportunity, to give the vendors another opportunity to go in there, sell real cheap tickets, and make the fans feel like, hey, they were at Yankee Stadium for the World Series in some way, not a bad idea. But yes, ticket prices are crazy. I'm looking just right now at StubHub. The cheapest seat, one ticket to get in, is $1,355 to sit in section 414, row 9. That is the cheapest ticket on StubHub right now, is $1,300. I mean, it's crazy. And we had a caller call up Keith. I was driving in listening. And he's like, look, I get it. In today's world, I get it. With, everything costing what it costs. You can't go to the grocery store without dropping $100. Like, you just can't. It's crazy. You can't. I mean, taco night. Keith's texting me. I don't know what the caller said. The last World Series was in Philadelphia. Did the caller say something else? Oh, the Yankees are... Oh, I got it. The Yankees are flying all their staff to L.A. That's why. The Yankees are flying everybody to Los Angeles, so I guess the stadium wouldn't be available. As opposed to when it was in Philadelphia and it's just an easy car ride over for the Philadelphia games. But I don't know, I was talking about taco night. Keith interrupted a taco night story. I mean, Keith, come on. I'm just kidding. Groceries are expensive. Everything's expensive. So if you're a season ticket holder, right? And like a guy called up, he said, I have season tickets. They give me an opportunity to buy playoff tickets. I got my World Series tickets for $300, right? If you have four tickets for $300 to the World Series and you could sell each of them right now, and that's the worst seat in the building, $1,300. Let's just say you could sell that ticket for double that, right? $3,000, $2,500. And you're making an upcharge that pays for your entire, you sell one World Series game and you just paid for your, you made up the money for your entire season or close to your, you're making $1,700 a ticket, more than that, for one game. Like, it's hard. And that's what the prices are. I understand anybody who would do it. Sucks to not go to a World Series game, but like, say you got tickets for the three of them, you sell one, you pay for everything. I get it. And right now it's the Dodgers, it's the Yankees, it's the biggest stars in the world. This is a hot ticket, man. This World Series, I can't wait. It's been able to hold its own and continue with the momentum, and like, we're all excited for it, but now it's getting long. I need it. I'm starting to get the juices flowing. Today's Thursday. We're a game away. Need this game to freaking start. Need to be Friday already. I need it to be Friday already.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Need it to be Friday already.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
McMonagle here with you on the Fan. All right, real quick, we've talked a little bit about the bottom of the order. And, you know, I told you Kiki Hernandez is a guy who scares me. I think keeping Will Smith down, he's a very good hitting catcher. He's done nothing really in this postseason. He had a home run the last game against the Mets. That would be big for the Dodgers. But let's focus on the Yankees real quick, because I want to give you two guys. And one guy who needs to keep doing what he's doing, and one guy who needs to wake up. And I guess, you know, both are fairly obvious, but I think that because of my, I don't want to say lack of confidence in it, but these are two guys who I feel good about Judge, obviously. I feel good about some of the guys who performed well, keeping it up. I feel good even about Verdugo doing what Verdugo does. Like, he's going to put the ball in play. He's going to get a couple hits. He's going to mostly make out, but like, I don't see that wavering up and down. Here's the two guys who I think could be dramatically different than what they've been. And one would be a major positive and one would scare me. And I'll give you the positive first. And it's not Wells. Because Wells has struggled here, but here's why I'm not going to say Wells to be a key figure if I had to pick one to get off the schneid. I'm not going to pick Wells because I don't think he's going to be the cleanup hitter anymore. With only one lefty pitcher on the staff for the Los Angeles Dodgers, I don't think they're going to stagger that middle of the lineup anymore. I think it's just going to be Judge and Stanton. So if that's going to be the case, and they're not going to put someone cleanup, and Wells hitting cleanup was dramatically changed this team. There's no doubt about it. And he was great. He had a great rookie season. He's probably exhausted catching this much. It's a lot for rookie catchers to go through the postseason like this. It's been a long time. If I thought he still could be the cleanup hitter, I would pick him for my guy who needs to turn it around. I'm not sure where they're going to hit him, but it's not going to be between Judge and Stanton. I really don't believe that. I think it's going to be more towards the bottom of the order. And as great as he's been and as much of a game changer, sure, it would be if he got hot again. I'm going to go with Jazz Chisholm because he can be more electric, and he can bring an element of speed to the base path that obviously Wells can't bring. And he can get infield singles, and he could do more. Like, Wells is someone who could just hit the ball out of the ballpark, you know, have good at-bats, no doubt, very important. I'm not saying he's not. But if you're not going to hit him cleanup, and he's not going to be protection for Judge, and his defensive game is so much more important to me than even Jazz at third. And Jazz at every defensive position, you can't have mistakes necessarily. But him controlling the run game back there, him working with the pitchers, you know, he's been so good defensively that I could make the case that even if Wells doesn't turn it around, he's so important defensively and at the bottom of the order. And really, I'm looking for him to drive the baseball and hit, bring in runs when he's hot, that I can live with him being the lesser version of himself. I'm looking for Jazz to turn things around and create havoc on the base path. And I'm looking for him to stop worrying about the big swing and driving the baseball and doing much and having a Yankee moment. And I understand we all want to have the Yankee moment. And he put out the cartoon or whatever, and he wants to be a New York legend. And I appreciate all that, and I like the optimism and the confidence and the swag. But I would really just, I'm looking for Jazz to just put good at-bats, maybe walk a little bit, get on base, and change the dynamic of the bottom of that order and create runs, because along with the Stanton home runs and the Judge home run, and obviously the Juan Soto home run, one of my favorite moments of this postseason is that ninth inning against Class A where they scored two runs and they did it at the bottom of the order, working good at bats. The Rizzo leadoff single, the Volpe base hit, the Verdugo just put the ball in play and get a run in, the base hit from Gleyber Torres, like the bottom of the order, getting on base and beating Emmanuel Class A in that game where you thought it was lost, you thought they were going to lose back-to-back games. Tied in the ninth with Emmanuel Class A after having already beat him the night before. I didn't see that coming. Like, that's as much fun as the big home runs. It really is. I know it's not one singular moment, but when you think back on it, how fun was that inning? To see this team manufacture runs at the bottom of the order. The bottom of the order has been such a problem for this team. The Yankees have two good hitters. We've heard it forever. And to see the bottom of the order come through with manufacturing a run or two against the best reliever in baseball, that's where it's at, man. And Jazz hasn't been a part of that, and he can be. He could be so he could steal bases. They haven't really stole bases in this postseason. Run the bases, steal some bases, create havoc, get these relievers on their toes. Like, I think he could be such an important piece. And so while him and Wells are both struggling, and they're going to face pretty much exclusively, for the most part, right-handed pitching, I think both are important. But if Wells was hitting cleanup, I would make it him my guy I'd like to see turn around. But considering all the different elements that Jazz can bring beyond hitting home runs and beyond driving in runs, creating runs, stealing bases, you know, creating that swag that this team could use, I'm really looking for him to have his moment in his series here in the World Series, even more than a Wells. And then the guy who needs to continue what he's doing, and I just mentioned his name, and this one scares me. Because I got to be honest, he has been the most up and down, and mostly down, if we're going to be fair, player on this team. And right now, Anthony Volpe looks like the guy who started the season out in Houston, looks like the guy who started the season red hot, and we had all these visions of what he was going to be in his second year. And then he wasn't for a long time. And then he had another real good run in the middle of the season, middle of the summer, towards the end of July. And then he wasn't. And Anthony Volpe has been so damn good in this postseason. And if you look at his chase rate, has dramatically dropped. He's swinging at strikes. That's it. He's swinging at strikes. He's hitting the ball hard. That at bat, I told you, they have this statistic. I brought it up the other night. They have this statistic for odds for every play in a game, how it affects the odds of not only winning that game, but winning the World Series. And up until the Soto home run, I'm not sure if the Soto home run changes this, but up until the Soto home run, no single base hit, no single swing impacted the Yankees winning a championship more than that base hit in the ninth inning from Anthony Volpe that sent Birdie pinch running for Rizzo all the way to third base and set up first and third, nobody out against Class A. That hit, you could argue, was as big as any in the postseason, helping him win that series and setting them up for the World Series starting on Friday night. And he's been so damn good. And I'm not telling you I don't have confidence that he can do it in the World Series. I'm not telling you that I suddenly think he's going to turn back into a pumpkin. But what I'm saying is we've seen it before. We've seen it turn on a dime. We've seen this kid be unbelievable, everything we wanted from him, putting the ball in play, drawing walks, running the bases, like everything we had, and he's made every play defensively other than the first error he made in game one of the ALDS. Since that moment, he's been great defensively. Everything about Anthony Volpe has been great, and it needs to continue. And I just feel like I can't just, I'll tell you, like there's guys who've been like this, like Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo is playing great, but he's been miserable a lot this year. I feel good Anthony Rizzo is going to give me good at-bats. I feel good about it. I'm not so worried about him fluctuating in the World Series, even with broken bones in his fingers. I feel like you can bank on the idea that Rizzo's going to give you good at-bats. He's completely abandoned his power swing. He's up there completely just looking to get base hits, contact, hit the ball the other way, stand on top of the plate, hoping to get hit by a pitch. He's completely abandoned trying to pull the ball down the line and get a home run. He is up there as a slap hitter, get on first base. And I have full confidence we will see that version of Rizzo and him be successful. I do. I have full confidence that Verdugo is not going to be the worst version of himself, that he's going to be this better postseason player, that he'll come through with hits now and then. He'll put the ball in play. He'll make plays out in the outfield. He will be a positive player for the New York Yankees. I actually have somewhat faith we'll see that. The one guy who's been really good that I just, for whatever reason, can't seem to just feel like this is the guy we're going to see the rest of the way here is Anthony Volpe. And he's so important to them, and I think he can, but I really want to see it. And for whatever reason, because of his up-and-down nature and the multiple times I felt like, okay, now he's figured it out, only to see him go back to the struggles. And I heard Aaron Boone on with John Boy talking about how mechanically it's night and day and how he's behind the baseball and how good he looks. And it's 100% true. He looks phenomenal. But I think him keeping it that way is as important as almost any other player. Continue, like Gleyber Torres clearly, and I have faith Gleyber Torres is going to be this good. I have complete faith Gleyber is going to be great in the World Series. Anthony Volpe is so important at the bottom of that lineup. He's been so valuable to them getting on base, so valuable to them getting base hits. I need that. We, the Yankees, need that guy to continue doing it, and he's the one guy who's been really good that I don't know if I can really just invest myself into the idea that he's going to continue to be really good. And so that's a game changer to me, a World Series changer for me. They need this postseason Anthony Volpe to continue rocking. 888-808-1019. So there's a couple guys. One, my most important get out of a slump is Jazz Chisholm, even more than Wells. And my most important to stay going, only because he's the one I don't know if I have the most confidence in him staying going, is Anthony Volpe. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, I am so glad I got to hear that. I have some points I wanted to talk to you about, but real quick, you are dead on with that stuff that you talked about between Jazz and Wells, because even that day that we missed him during the postseason when Trevino was out there, and I love Trevino. I love Trevi.
Yeah.
You saw why it doesn't, like, anything we get from Wells offensively, I hate to say it, is really just gravy. He is just so much more important on everything else that he does defensively, and even the way that he calls the game for the pitches. So, you know, if you know, that is really the priority as far as he's concerned. Anything mm-hmm. I want other stuff from him as well, too, but you're right. I can take everything else as gravy. It's really Jazz that I need to get going.
Yeah.
And as far as that Volpe stuff that you said, you know, I am of the firm belief, and I said that to you before because I was one of these people that you got to let him go through his lump. I'm of the firm belief that the ups and downs during the season makes it so that you get what you want and you don't have to worry about it, that this is the time for him to be steady now because he went through that. And I really think that was a key factor that you just called out just now, but I think you're going to get what you want with that. To get to why I called, though, I got two things I wanted to bring up to you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The first one, I was looking at some numbers, and this is just like on turds and giggles. I looked at Stanton's numbers, you know, because just like Soto, we got him in trade. I looked at his numbers in his first season, right?
Yep.
And I looked at Soto's numbers this year. And oddly enough, you know, Stanton hit, what, I think 38 dingers that year. Soto has 41. Stanton, like, he hasn't beaten average because Stanton was somewhere like 266.
Yeah,
Soto was 8. And his OPS is like, you know, I think like 130 points higher or something like that.
Sure.
But it's just weird to me how the numbers kind of like shape up somewhat. Like, I think he only had him by like 9 ribbies. Stanton had 100. Soto had 109. So the numbers, like, production-wise come out to be the same. But I know for a fact with my eyes that this Soto season just felt different to that season. Like, I'm trying to go back in my mind and try to remember what was it about Stanton or what – like, I just
and
know
Stanton,
for a fact.
You're talking about – I'm sorry, Val. I want to make sure. You're talking about Stanton's first year with the Yankees.
2018. If you go back and look at his numbers.
Yeah.
You go back and you look at his numbers.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you. 38 right. versus 41.
Right, I got
100
you.
Versus 109. It's
got you.
But I know for a fact with my eyes, I know, and the way that it feels, this Soto season is totally different from that season. It's just weird like that.
Yeah.
And the other point
good.
The other point I wanted to get to you, you know, you were talking about some stuff with the Mets yesterday and earlier in the week as well, too. And I think you didn't get the reaction that you were expecting because there's a few little nuances that went, like, I feel like the Mets fans from the beginning of the season right up until the end when they were ready to ship Alonso out before he had that big postseason home run to keep them going.
Yeah.
Like, they had done that so many times before as far as that tough love. that right now that's why they were like, that's one of the reasons why they were so willing to be like, you know what? Thank you so much. It was a great ride. Let's move on. And not only that, but as much as that narrative changed, we all had it in mind early on that a lot of it had to do with Stearns getting to evaluate what he actually had. If you look at the sample size now, especially the fact that they went as far as they did, and you got to see like young kids like Vientos in the postseason, Alvarez has things like, yes, he might have fallen short and given you some deficiencies, but he has win a league and time to go back now and focus and know what he needs for next season. You saw Lindor blossom. Like a lot of the stuff that Stearns needed to have in order to do his job. Never mind what people are saying as far as, you know, Uncle Cohen's money going and doing whatever we want. As far as the enthusiasm that you have to have something to actually build on, Stearns has so much data in front of him to actually look at that it's going to make his job, to whatever extent it could be, just a little bit easier. And I think that's why you got the reaction that you got from that
fan. And thank you for the call, Val. I understand why the Met fan feels the way they feel. I'm not even saying their feeling is necessarily wrong. I just don't like the idea that how quickly you're able to transition to it. And maybe that's parsing words, and maybe that's, you know, naive on my part or being silly. But to me, like, part of falling in love with the team, right? And clearly the Met fan fell in love with this team, and rightfully so. Part of falling in love with the team is believing in them and that they could win and be successful and that this was a dream season that could end up in a championship. And not only because of Grimace or OMG or any other stupid reason, the reason was because of the baseball they were playing. Because they, and I said this a bunch, but it wasn't like they kept saying nobody expected us to be here. And while that's true, it's more than that. It's nobody expected them to transform themselves into a team that deserved to be there. It wasn't a fluke. Like, it was fun. It was a lot. It was a crazy narrative. From where they were, 11 games under 500, it was kind of amazing, and it was a lot of fun. But if you take the fact that they had the best record in baseball since June, the fluke was 11 games under 500. The fluke was the miserable start they got off to. Like, if you're going to be the best team in baseball since June, you deserve to be in the NLCS. You could, wherever you started from, whatever low position you started from, and however you had to, you know, I shouldn't say sneak because that's not the right word, but however you had to get into the playoffs, the last spot of the wild card, whatever the case may be, when you had the best starting ERA and the best record in baseball since June, it's not a miracle that you're there. And then you beat Philadelphia. It's not a miracle you're there, and it's not some sort of like, wow, you didn't just wake up and find yourself in the NLCS. You busted your ass and were the best team in baseball for 4 months. So when that team loses, in my mind, it's a little disrespectful to that group to suddenly just immediately go right to, well, what a great season, gang. What fun it was. Nobody really expected anything positive out of this anyway. It's amazing we got what we got. Let's just enjoy it. It's something that my kids say from school or whatever. You get what you get and you don't get upset. That's it. That's how the Met fan treated my, you know, treated their season like my son treats the snack I give him for lunch. Oh, Andrew, what'd you get? Apples again? Hey, you get what you get and you don't get upset. Like, that was the reaction from Met fans immediately. Hey, this was wonderful. I'm so glad we got this. Oh, gang, let's all get together and celebrate what a wonderful season it was. And I think it was a wonderful season, and you should be pleased with it. And it hopefully is the beginning of better seasons to come and something you can look back on with great reverence and memories. But in the moment, when it comes to an end, like the immediate, like before the final out was made, it was, hey, what a great year. It just, I don't know. It seemed like you should be more upset you lost. Should be more disappointed in Manaea. Like, I know he was at his end and he talked about hitting the wall, and you can't kill him necessarily or be furious with him. But hey, when you get a lead in the first, can you give me an inning or two of zeros? just to build some fear inside this Dodger team that they might blow this thing? Can you figure out a way to get Tommy Edmonds out? Like, you know, can you come through once with the bases loaded? That's all. I understand why we got the reaction they got. I understand why they feel the way they feel. I don't understand why they didn't feel. It's not so much I have a hard time understanding why they did feel. I have a tougher time understanding why they didn't feel the opposite. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Because I would have. I did. I was behind this team. I put money on this team. I expected more from this team in that series than to get pounded in four games. That's all. You want to move on now? Once the World Series is over, you're on to Juan Soto and listening for Stearns in the offseason. Today, you want to start feeling like, okay, well, it really was a great year. Fine. But like the day after, the morning after, the before the final out, to immediately transition into what a fun season. Just seemed a little, I don't know. Not giving this team its due respect. They had. I know the Dodgers are better, right? The Dodgers are better. They played better in the series. They're better. But Mets played their asses off for 4 months. They deserved. They earned a little bit of anger. They earned a little bit of disappointment. That's how good they were. It wasn't a miracle team. They're not, you know, it's not like I'm watching a hockey highlight right now. It's not the Columbus Blue Jackets who sweep the President Trophy winning Lightning, and suddenly they find themselves in the Stanley Cup after just getting hot in the postseason. Hey, what a run. Like, they had the best record in the sport. Baseball's a long 162-game season. You look at this team, the mistake was the beginning of the season, not the end. For more of the year, they were the best team in baseball than they were 11 games under 500. I just felt a little more anger, a little more disappointment was in order, as opposed to immediately transitioning to what a year. Because, again, I can equate it. I know it's not the same. I know the Yankees have more championships. I get it. I know the Yankees have had more postseason experience. I get it. But 2017 was very similar. The 2017 season was very similar. The Yankees had an 82 over-under. Nobody expected anything of them at all. And they had this great run. Judge hits 50 home runs. You know, they make trades at the deadline that improve the team. They go on this great postseason run. They give up two runs in the first inning of the wild card game. Severino doesn't even make it out of the first. They hit a 3-run bomb to get right back in the game. They end up winning that game. They fall down 0-2 to the Cleveland Indians at the time, who had the best record in the American League, coming off winning the American League the year before, had 22 straight wins during the course of the regular season, the dominant team in the American League, down 0-2 to them, come back and win three straight games. They lose the first two in Houston. They win all three in New York. They head back to Houston up 3-2. When they lost, I didn't go, wow, what a run. I mean, the general manager still hung up on it. Which, by the way, we can get into. I killed him for it. Let's be fair. I'm a Cashman supporter. I'm a Cashman defender. I'm the Cashman shill. I hated those comments from the general manager. Hated them. Still hung up on 17. But that season was very similar to this Mets season. And I didn't immediately go, hey, what a year, gang. And, you know, now looking back on it, I would have been an idiot too, because they're just getting to the World Series now. Took 7 years. We all thought the same thing. This young core, you got Gleyber Torres coming up. The next year, he's the crown jewel of the Cubs organization, one of the best players in baseball. He'll be here next year. They're only getting younger and better. Oh, look, they just traded for the MVP and Giancarlo Stanton. They're going to be great. And they up until this season, they never even got back to that moment. You just don't know. An opportunity was lost. A team that was the best team for the entire second half failed in the NLCS. And it deserved a little bit of anger as opposed to immediate, hey, what a great gang. What a great season, gang. Unbelievable.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.